by all that you hold dear of this good earth, I bid you stand, men of the West!
Welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 26, Captain Fantastic and Creating a Story from Scratch for NaNoWriMo. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I hope you had a great week of writing. For those of you who have started NaNoWriMo, that's the National Novel Writing Month, where you're supposed to write a 50,000-word novel in 30 days. I think I have something really awesome for you, something very inspirational. When I sat down to write my article this week, I was going to write something completely different, and then I remembered it was NaNoWriMo, and I thought, you know what, well, instead of coming up with the usual story structure article this week, which I had something really cool, but I'll save that for later, instead of doing that, why don't we make November brainstorming month? So it'll help people who are in the process of writing, it'll give them ideas and concepts that they can grab onto and hopefully make their stories better. So I wrote this article, which turned out to be 1,700 words exactly, which is exactly how much you need to write once a day if you're going to hit 50,000 in 30 days. So I figured that's a pretty good sign that I did something good. And I ended up coming up with a pretty cool idea for a story that if I had the time, I would write in a second. And maybe someday I will when I have more time. So there is no follow-up this week. October, once again, was a crazy month, super busy. That's why the blog posts have kind of tampered down from the once a day to about once every 2 weeks now. Just trying to get caught up with everything. Started on a bunch of projects that are taking up a lot of the time, but I still want to make sure that I get the podcast and the article in each week. So we're just getting back into the swing of things here at Narrative First, and looking forward to providing you like some really great brainstorming tools and creativity tools that you can use for your own writing. But first, what I want to do is get to an analysis. So, late last week, I ended up checking out Captain Fantastic. One of my favorite things to do every year is to go to Sundance. There's nothing I love more than snow and movies, and in Sundance you get both in spades. And I went last year, didn't really get to see much of anything because I didn't realize you had to buy tickets in October, but I'm covered this year. And there were some really fantastic movies that I'm just now picking up on. You know, I saw Hunt for the Wilder People over the summer, and I remember that was being talked about a lot, and that was a great movie. I finally saw Swiss Army Man, which was the buzz last January, and which I absolutely loved, but I'm not too sure about the structure. Still haven't done my analysis of that. But another one we really wanted to see was Captain Fantastic, and it stars Viggo Mortensen? You know, the king from Lord of the Rings. By all that you hold dear of this good earth, I bid you stand, men of the West! It stars... It stars Viggo as Ben Cash. He's a father of six, raising his kids in the Pacific Northwest in the mountains, you know, trying to get them away from society. And their mother kills herself, and he has to find a way to reintegrate his kids into society and grow in the process. And it was a beautiful film. I absolutely loved it. In fact, I saw it twice. I saw it one night, and then the next night I just had to watch it again because I just thought it was amazing. And the most amazing part was how the main character's problem and the main character's issue, which is Viggo's character, how that synced up perfectly with the overall story problem, and how one's resolution ended up creating a resolution in the other. And it's just a great way of showing how a great writer should find a way to show both the subjective and objective viewpoints of a problem. And the reason why people go to stories, the reason why people love stories so much, is because you're getting something that you're not getting in real life, which is meaning. We can't be simultaneously within ourselves and without ourselves at the same time. In a story, you're actually afforded that opportunity because you get to see what it's like to be within from the point of view of the main character, and then you get to see from without from the overall story view, where you get to see, you know, everybody from a third person. If you know the four through lines of a complete narrative, it's the overall story through line, the main character through line, the influence character through line, and the relationship story through line. And they correspond to the four different perspectives that you can take to look at a problem. The overall story through line is the they perspective, the relationship story is the we perspective, the main character is the I perspective, and the influence character is the you perspective. So you have all four of those, and you have all four views of a problem completely covered. And the idea is that, you know, in real life, you can take I, you, and we. So when you take I, you can see you, and you can definitely see we, but you can't see they, because you can't see yourself from a third person. And then the other thing that you can do is you can look at a group of people from afar as they, and then you can see you from that perspective, and you can see we, but you can't see I. And that's usually the one people are like, well, what do you mean I can't see I if I can see we? And precisely, we is completely different from I. And the problem with most paradigms of story, or people that, you know, try and talk about A lines and B lines and C lines, is they combine the I and the we, or they combine the we and the you together because they think it all blends together. And the great thing about Dramatica is you learn that actually they are separate perspectives. So the great thing about Captain Fantastic is that Matt Ross, who is the writer-director, and it turns out Matt Ross is Gavin from Silicon Valley, which blew me away. He was the, if you saw the HBO series Big Love, he's got a very distinct face, and he's a great actor. He was the gay son in Big Love, and in Silicon Valley, he's kind of like the Google billionaire. And I guess he's also an amazing writer and a great director because he made Captain Fantastic. But what was so great is that he found a way to show both a subjective point of view and an objective point of view on the problem of non-acceptance. The story starts out, and you know, his wife commits suicide, which gives you a story driver of action, and the overall story is about, you know, trying to conceive of how are they going to keep this family together, because it's slowly starting to fall apart because of mom missing. And at the heart of it, you know, lies the film's central conflict, which is Ben's uncompromising attitude towards present-day society. He has very unconventional beliefs, and his through line ends up in fixed attitude. You know, while it's positive on the outside, his inability to reconsider or even entertain an alternate viewpoint creates all kinds of conflict with his teenage son, Relian, his wife's sister, Harper, and her husband Dave and their kids, and of course his wife's parents Jack and Abigail. You know, his favorite catchphrase is "Power to the people, stick it to the man," which, you know, just basically describes somebody who's coming from a place of non-acceptance, and it creates positive, because there are some positive aspects of that point of view, which is great too because it's very well balanced. But it also happens to be, you know, the problem in the overall story, because it creates problems with all these different family members and extended family members. You know, one of the greatest scenes in the movie is when they do go to Harper and Dave's house. That's Catherine Hahn and Steve Zahn, and they're having dinner, and, you know, the modern family can't really talk about suicide, and so they talk about the wife being in the hospital, and she got sick, and then, you know, Ben is like, well, what do you mean? She slit her wrist. She's dead. And, you know, they can't believe that he would even talk about that. But, you know, the film does a really good way of showing how well-adjusted Ben's kids are, because he doesn't have to lie to them. And then, of course, when his sister-in-law challenges him that he's, you know, endangering the kids, he shows how his unconventional homeschooling techniques are really improving the lives of the kids and basically make fools of the modern kids who don't even know what the Bill of Rights is. And she, you know, she goes so far as to say, you're going to get them killed, which is not as bad as Leslie's father, who claims child abuse. You know, and there you have an example of an overall story symptom of potentiality, where they're all focused on, you know, what could possibly happen to the kids, and the missed potential that these kids are being robbed of because they're out in the forest learning how to survive, you know, in the 1800s. And of course, everybody is just so obsessed with responding with certainty and what they believe is the sure and most definite way to go. But one of the most compelling parts of the story, which is what I think makes it so that it's not, you know, 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think a bunch of reviewers are people that, critics that, you know, watch the film had a hard time empathizing with Ben, is that he comes from a holistic problem-solving style. And if you listen to the previous podcast on linear and holistic, the difference between those problem-solving styles, you know that most male audience members have a hard time relating to somebody who thinks holistically. It just doesn't make sense to them. And for the longest time, I was always using Moulin Rouge as an example. Now, I'm going to definitely use Ben in Captain Fantastic as an example, because there's three really obvious examples. When he's trying to get the kids to do their studies late at night, and everybody seems really grumpy and they're not really paying attention, he goes and he gets his guitar and starts playing, and then everybody joins in and plays. So he changes the environment, you know, he changes the balance of things in order to affect change in everybody else. And that's a very holistic problem-solving style. You know, a linear person would say, hey, do your homework, get it done. A holistic person is like, hey, I'm just going to play the guitar. I'm not going to tell you why I'm doing it, but I'm going to play it, and then everybody's going to join in. Same thing later when they find out what happened to Mom. Everybody's really upset. So what do? You climb a sheer rock face, which again is completely illogical, but it gets everybody focused on completing a task and working together and finding a way to pick themselves up, literally pick themselves up off a sheer rock face. Again, another holistic problem-solving style. And then the third one is when they're, you know, once again down about things, he does it's a criminal smash and grab in a grocery store on the trip where everyone gets to have a Noam Chomsky day, where they stick it to the man. You know, they steal all this food and they celebrate and they get their, you know, get their excitement up, because he doesn't want them to be trapped by kind of the modern day society. So there are three examples right there of a holistic problem solving style, and I just felt that that was really good, and that's what sets the film apart and what makes it feel so different, is he doesn't have the typical linear problem solving style that you would find in your typical male character. In the end, Ben eventually comes to accept his hand and his wife Leslie's downfall. And that's where you have the main character's solution of acceptance. That teenage son that he had such a problem with, you know, has his back turned to him for most of the film. And as soon as he confesses, you know what, I knew that she was in trouble and being out in the Pacific Northwest was not good for her, but I didn't think enough to get her away from there. And that's his, you know, acceptance of his own hand in it. And there's an appreciation on the part of the son, like, oh, okay, well, Dad's accepting this. You know, I always saw this, and now he's accepting it. So I'm actually going to physically turn around and address him personally. And that shows Ben's main character resolve changed. So he's opened up to the fact that he had a part in all this, and he's kind of loosening up the way that he sees the world. And it helps because in the relationship story through line, which is the relationship between father and children, this relationship story solution of probability, you know, him accepting that he was most likely part of that brings them together and kind of releases all the tension that was between them. But the best part of the film is the last scene where it's kind of like a bookend scene, same music, but a little happier. And it recalls the opening scene, but instead of being in the Pacific Northwest, now they're somewhere, it's kind of like in between. It's kind of a synthesis between Ben's way and the modern way, where the school bus now is a place for chickens. It's not a thing to stand out from everybody else in modern society. And they have lunch bags because obviously they're going to a regular school. But unlike the modern family, who is on their iPhones and iPads and completely rude and not engaging their brains at all, Ben's family is actually sitting there quietly at the breakfast table, which I've never seen before in my entire life, and going through and reading and writing, and he's found a way to bring acceptance in the overall story as well. So not only does he have that main character solution of acceptance, but in the overall story, there's an acceptance of the modern way. Like, you can have both. You can actually accept both and create a synthesis of the two different ways. And it's shown to be a very good thing. It's got a story judgment of good. For everybody involved, it's a much better situation. So Captain Fantastic is fantastic storytelling that rests on a strong and competent story structure, weaving Ben's personal refusal of his hand in the events of his wife's death with the refusal to accept the norms of society, represents a masterstroke in narrative formation. By presenting the positive aspects of acceptance both from within and without, subjective and objective, the film offers the viewer an opportunity to challenge their own justifications and perhaps find a way to integrate such acceptance into their own lives. the other thing I managed to do this week was to write an article about how you would create a story from scratch for NaNoWriMo. You know, on their site, they're like, oh, you know, NaNoWriMo is all about enthusiasm and dedication, you know, and persistence and, you know, writing those 1,700 words a day. But after a while, you know, you start to lose hope and you just kind of flounder because you're not really headed in any kind of direction. And the great thing about a Dramatica point of view is that it gives you that direction without telling you exactly what to write. The real challenge in writing something for NaNoWriMo is writing something meaningful, because eventually enthusiasm and dedication will wane, and without any kind of direction or intent, you're not going to get anywhere. So a Dramatica story form aids writers in making sure that their work contains that all-important purpose. So let's just pretend, and I'll just go through the article, and I'll leave a link in the show notes, and you can follow along if you want to there. But let's pretend that you at least know what kind of genre you want to write, and it's a Western. So if you're a member of Narrative First, if you subscribe, you have access to our gist collections, which once a month we create a gist collection. And there's a bit of a backlog, which is also what November is going to be about, is catching up with all the gist collections since I think July or August. No, I believe there's a double issue, July and August. I've actually done them. I actually had our story consultant, Johnny Gentry, went through and created the War collection and the Teen Sex Comedy collection, which is a great combo if you can put them together. So if you're a Narrative First subscriber, you know that you can go and download the Western Gist collection, which comprises close to 100,000 different gists for Dramatica's story elements. So once you have those installed, then you go over to the brainstorming tool in Dramatica. You make sure you select replace existing story form, because we want to come up with a completely new story that's never been done before. And you want to make sure you have assign random gists on there and replace existing gists, because you want to start out with something completely new and completely fresh. And I just went there, did that, installed the Western gist genre collection, and clicked spin. And the first one I got, I absolutely fell in love with. I thought it was great. You can look at it in the show notes, but you'll see the overall story, the domain, is being righteous about the cattle baroness. And I thought, well, there could probably be some religious overtones there. And then I thought, well, maybe there's some kind of cult at work. And then all of a sudden my mind started going all different places, and I thought, what about combining the occult, like a horror film, with a Western? And I'm not sure if this has been done. If it is, I'm not aware of it, but I'll have to look into it. Or if you know any film like that, please let me know. It's what sparked just that one story point, right? Just the domain of being righteous about the cattle baroness. All of a sudden I knew I wanted to write an occult film with in a Western. So kind of like a horror slash Western, which is crazy. That, like, in 5 minutes I had a complete notion of what it was I wanted to write for National Novel Writing Month. And that was only one story point. So looking further into the story form, I could see that everyone's concerned with their devotion to the U.S. Marshal, which is great. That works so well with, you know, being concerned with the righteous cattle baroness, and issues of looking forward to seeing a particular group. So if you talk about cultists, and, you know, you could replace a particular group with either Jesus or the Black Witch or whatever, you know, they worship for, you know, what they're looking forward to seeing, you can see how that looking forward would create tons and tons of conflict and create issues in a story like that. And I thought the overall story solution of holding sway over someone, that's a really dark way to end a story about a cult. And from there, I just completely fell in love with the story. So I zipped over to the main character, and under that through line, you can see that we find a character who's completely consumed with arresting a bounty hunter, and, well, that's their domain, arresting a bounty hunter, and trapping bandits is her concern. And so I thought, all right, well, who would that be? So maybe she's the local sheriff's deputy, a young woman, because every other man who took the job ended up dead or left town. And her need to prove herself and show that she can do these things only gets her into more trouble, because she's an activity character, so it's like the stuff that she does gets her into trouble. It's not like she's a situation character where it's her physicality, or it's not like, you know, like a Shrek or a Neo, and it's not like a fixed attitude character like Rick in Casablanca or Marlin in Finding Nemo, you know, where they have to change their attitude. But it's more about the activities, kind of like if you've seen Michael Clayton or Braveheart, you know, the stuff that those main characters do is what actually gets them into trouble. If they just stopped doing it, they would be fine. But for some reason, she's got a stick up her butt, and I looked at her main character problem of re-examining conclusions, and I felt like she just can't stand people who are wishy-washy, who can't make a decision, who are always, whenever somebody re-examines conclusions, she's just like, ah! And she just goes off, and she has to find, you know, just do it on her own, find the bounty hunters on her own. And then, of course, her main character unique ability of being moral is perfect for a story about cultists and a righteous cattle baroness. If you know anything about Dramatica, you know that the main character unique ability is the kind of thing that will help Abby bring resolution to the overall story about the cultists and their righteousness towards the baroness. Now, I have no idea where Abby came from. That was actually my own, it came out of my own brain. I was like, well, maybe her name is Abby. So again, you know, I do have some input into the story. Dramatica is just giving you story points that all work together. You know, they're not just these random things that, you know, are connect the dots. It's connecting the meaning, but it's not particularly connecting dots for you, not telling you exactly what to write. And you can, of course, expand on it and kind of tweak the gist to get what you want. And I'll show you why, or I'll show you how to do that in the influence character through line. So, again, you know, like I spoke before, you have the main character through line and the influence character through line. And the idea is that the main character would be fine and they would keep doing things the way they always would if it wasn't for this pesky influence character, this person who's got a completely different way of doing things. If they didn't come in and start, you know, pinpointing and needling all the stuff that was their own baggage and stuff that they had to deal with. And so I figured Abby would do fine if it weren't for Jack Lawler, which I don't know where that name came from, but Jack Lawler. And he's the local, unpleasant, and repulsive gold miner who cuts quick to the chase, makes his kill, and gets out. Like a verbal kill, right? He's just kind of stinging and just gets in there, makes his little acerbic comment, and gets out. And that just, it drives somebody crazy who's trying to get things done, that somebody would come in and kind of mess up the way people think and the way that they do things because of somebody who's so manipulative like that. So that uninhibited nature of his drives Abby crazy and challenges her to reconsider tracking down the bounty hunter. So where did he come from? If you look at the influence character through line in the link, you'll find three definite story points. You'll see a domain of being odious towards the 49er, you'll see a concern of personifying a pistol, and you'll see a problem of being uninhibited. So this is a brainstorming exercise, which means you as the author, you don't have to follow exactly what Dramatica says. When I work with people in the Dramatica mentorship program and we do the playground exercises, which involves a lot of gist creation, some people feel like they have to follow the gist exactly, and if they don't follow the gist exactly, that's a problem. What I'll get to before, there's actually a story element behind the gist. That's the important part. But the actual storytelling, you can tweak to make it fit the story that you want. And I really didn't want Jack to be focused on somebody else, you know, being odious towards a 49er. So I just figured he would be an odious 49er, which is the same thing. It's just slightly tweaked to fit my story. So I mixed that up with someone who is attacking and quick to kill, like a pistol, because the concern is personifying a pistol, which I thought was really fascinating and kind of a neat thing that I personally would never have thought of. But so it's just a unique way of getting into the story and gives me an opportunity to expand on what it is that comes from straight me. It allows me to add my own flavor onto a solid structure. And then, of course, being uninhibited, I just add that into his nature, and I just felt like that fit perfectly with the first two story points. So you put them all together, and you have this really interesting and compelling character. But what's more important is that you have a character that is perfectly designed to interact and challenge Abby on a deep and personal level. And why is that? So if you're into the reports and you turn off show gists, you can actually see what those story elements are underneath. And again, in the link, I provided the report without the gists. And here you can see the foundation for Jack's throughline. Being odious is just another way of saying manipulation. So it's a throughline about a manner of thinking. Personifying a pistol is another way of saying changing one's nature. And of course, being uninhibited is another way of saying uncontrolled. And it turns out manipulation, changing one's nature, and uncontrolled are exactly the kind of story elements needed to challenge Abby and her activities, her concern of obtaining, and her drive of reconsider. Now, where did those come from? Well, arresting a bounty hunter is an activity, trapping the bandits is obtaining, and re-examining conclusions is another way of saying reconsider. So these gists that are there in the first report, being odious, personifying a pistol, and being uninhibited, and those three work together to challenge arresting a bounty hunter, trapping bandits, and re-examining conclusions, they work because of those story elements underneath. Dramatica's gist walked the line between story form and storytelling. And I guarantee there's no way I would have come up with the character of Jack Lawler simply by reading manipulation, changing one's nature, and uncontrolled. But with the gist feature, and particularly the Narrative First genre gist collection, my imagination and my muse kicks in, allowing me the freedom to create while simultaneously enjoying the safety net of those ideas connecting to structure. So it's not like I'm just randomly throwing stuff out there and it's a story meeting where everybody's talking about their favorite movie or about what they had for dinner or, you know, problems at home and how that has absolutely no connection with the story that you're working on right now. But the ideas that are coming out are actually connected with the story that you're working on. And so you have the freedom to create and the freedom to kind of entertain your muse, but you have that tie to structure so that you're not wasting your time, you're actually working towards something. And in the case of NaNoWriMo, which is all about time and all about those 30 days, that's a huge lifesaver. So from here, I would just start writing, definitely. I mean, if I didn't have the business and I didn't have other projects that I'm working on and mentor students to work with, I would seriously write this because it's really compelling to me. But of course, you know, that's my own thing that I'm interested in. And if you look at the story form, it tells you so much more. Jack will eventually change his acerbic nature by virtue of being inspired by Abby's character, and this will play out with him being in command of something. You know, his character resolve, because the main character resolve is steadfast, his influence character resolve will be changed. So while he tries to get Abby to change, he ends up being the one that changes. And instead of being uninhibited, he's actually going to be in command of something. So either I figured he'll either be mayor, or he'll work with the U.S. Marshal and maybe become general. I figured it would be something positive, because I would love Abby's point of view to be something positive that inspires Jack to change. Something else that's there, the townspeople fail to wish gold into existence, which is an amazing story goal for, you know, this story about cultists. You know, well, the story goal is wishing gold into existence, which is great, and instead focus on having the horse's future told. So the story goal is wishing gold into existence, and the consequence is having the horse's future told. And I thought that was just an awesome combination of the two. You can just see cultists on their knees wishing for gold, led to living the righteous life by a cattle baroness, you know, evil cattle baroness, only to fail because of some dire future predicted of the town's one horse. And I just thought that was just so unique and so compelling. And they work together, and they work with the other story points that we've already been talking about. And then also, you know, time runs out, but they all end up in a better place emotionally. So there's a time lock on the story, which if I was to write it, I'd probably change it to option lock, just so it can reach a larger audience. It did give me an idea. Maybe there's a deadline. You know, maybe their wishes can only hold up long enough until the frost comes. You know, that's my Game of Thrones Winter is Coming copy. And then when that happens, they'll be left with Percy, which I guess that's the name of the horse, to look for guidance. You know, once the frost comes, we'll have to turn to Percy. And, you know, I didn't put it in here, but also the relationship through line, which I completely skipped. Let's see, what is it? Oh, wow. Okay, so the relationship through line is the domain is being single, and the concern is making the Pinkertons' future. Okay, so we have Abby and we have Jack, and their relationship is all about being single. So, you know, you have two people who are obviously going to be attracted to each other, but are driven to be single no matter what, probably because of some contract with the Pinkertons and because there's some future guarantee, you know, if they don't stay together. I mean, that's great. What's the problem? Being in an uncontrolled group. All right, there you go. They're being in an uncontrolled group, which could be, you know, the town that they're in and how that drives up the, because they're so uncontrolled. You know, maybe they're both former Pinkertons, and they're both so used to being controlled, but now they're uncontrolled, and that's actually pulling them closer together, but then that's going to make it harder for them to reach that concern of the future, and their relationship will grow because of those issues. I mean, that's just off the top of my head, but do you see how that will round out the story, and now you have the overall story with this evil cattle baroness. You have the main character trying to seek out a bounty hunter, obviously on contract from the Pinkertons. And then the influence character is there trying to just be a pain in the ass and unpleasant and cause all kinds of issues for everybody. And then, of course, you know, they have their relationship, which is this shared contract between each other. I mean, it's great. It's really cool. And then, of course, in the end, it's all shown to be a good thing. You know, while the townspeople may still be caught under the fog of cultist ideals, you know, because it's a failed story outcome, maybe their blindness is just what they need in order to survive, and everybody ends up in a much better place, including Abby. And maybe, you know, they had to, you know, while they failed in their quest to wish gold into existence, maybe they ended up having to rely on something more tangible, something they already had, the horse, which could be the one thing that actually gives them hope. And maybe that's all Abby needed to learn as well. So, yeah, parts of it seem completely crazy, but to me, they seem crazy good. And, you know, if you were presented this story form with all the gists, you might have come up with something completely different. But you would still come up with a story that was solid and purposeful and meaningful, because all the story elements would be linked together to create a greater holistic message. or you would have some kind of author's intent. Now, I wrote this article. Obviously, I have 20 years of experience with Dramatica, so I'm obviously able to go a lot faster. But, I mean, I wrote this article in an hour and 20 minutes, so I had a complete story ready to go, all outlined in my head. At least, I had enough. That's why I skipped the relationship through line. I had enough that I could actually start writing. I would, if I was involved in NaNoWriMo, I wouldn't sit there and fill out every story point and figure out all the different things and go through all of Dramatica's query system. I would actually just start writing. Like, I mean, I just spent an hour and a half. I have this really cool story idea that I never had thought of 2 hours prior, and now it's just time to start writing. And then when I get lost or I get kind of mired down in descriptions or I'm not sure exactly where to go, I could always turn back to the story form and go, okay, what's supposed to be happening in this act, right? Like if we're in, let's see, you know, oh, everybody gets lost in the middle of the second act, right? So in the overall story, they're moving from getting spooked by the sidekick to being enchanted by the soiled dove. I have no idea what that means, but it gives me a lot to go on. And of course, the last signpost is concentrating on the thief. I mean, this is really compelling because it's a Western set in the fixed attitude or mind domain, which I know has not been done before. So none of you better steal this idea from me. You know, it's a Western, and the remake of The Magnificent Seven just came out, which looks beautiful and well-acted, but why spend so much money on something that's already been told when you can come up with something completely new in less than an hour and a half? You know, Magnificent Seven may be great, but it doesn't have Abby. It doesn't have a righteous cattle baroness or cultist who turned to a horse for guidance. And it certainly doesn't have Jack Lawler, the acerbic gold miner turned general. In less than an hour and a half, I have the foundation for a complete and compelling story and an original story. I'm not just copying what Dramatica has provided for me, I'm actually taking those gists and creating something that's uniquely my own. So Dramatica offers writers and participants of NaNoWriMo an opportunity to expand their writing horizons while ensuring that what they write contains purpose and meaning. Some enjoy writing by the seat of their pants, but end up discouraged and frustrated when their seat fails to carry them through the pointless jumble that spills from their minds. A Dramatica story form puts the pieces together in such a way that they all add up to a greater purpose: telling a story that means something. NaNoWriMo rightfully encourages writers with its motto, "The world needs your novel," but they also need it to mean something. That's it for this edition of the Narrative First podcast. If you have any questions about how you can quickly come up with an outline for your story for this month, feel free to write to us at narrativefirst.com/contact. Maybe you want to get into the Dramatica Mentorship Program, which is at narrativefirst.com/mentor. Have a great week writing. Good luck this month writing your novel. I'm going to have more brainstorming series in the weeks to come, and we will see you next week.